morning. It's Monday, July 21st. I'm Shumita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, how federal cuts to Medicaid and SNAP are impacting states' budgets, what to expect if you're expecting a $1,000 baby bonus, and why the Amish don't really have allergies. But first, now that we are 6 months into President Trump's second term in office, let's take stock of how Americans are feeling about his administration overall and about two major pillars of his agenda, immigration and the economy. Starting with the big picture, according to the New York Times, which tracks polls by dozens of organizations to compile an average approval rating, the majority of Americans are unhappy with Trump's second term. 53% disapprove on average, compared to 44% who approve. His approval rating is lower than his three most recent predecessors, Biden, Obama, and Bush. Overall, his average rating has declined since Inauguration Day. Now, that is not uncommon. Biden, Obama, and Bush all saw similar trends. But the Times points out Trump's approval rating appears to be dropping slightly faster than theirs.
The lens through which we should view these approval rating numbers is basically that over the past 15 years, essentially since 2010, the second year of Barack Obama's presidency, approval ratings for presidents have been sharply polarized by partisanship.
That's Philip Bump, who recently wrote about where support stands for Trump today for The Washington Post.
People who are members of the president's own party love him. People who are not members of the president's own party dislike him. And independents swing back and forth and make up the difference between him being slightly higher and him being slightly lower.
Bump, in his reporting, specifically took a closer look at how support for Trump has evolved over the last decade. It's been about 10 years since he emerged as the leading Republican candidate in the 2016 election. And Bump found his core base has remained relatively steady over that time.
We have not seen anything where Donald Trump takes a distinct hit over the long term. When the Republicans fared poorly in the 2022 midterms, he was looked at with, you know, kind of one eyebrow raised, the same thing after January 6th, and everyone came back around.
On issues like immigration, however, recent polling suggests the president is losing ground with Americans writ large. A new CNN poll found that a majority of people, 55%, think Trump is going too far with his mass deportation campaign. That's a 10-point jump since February. 57% said they oppose his plans to build new detention facilities, and 53% oppose increasing the budget for ICE. Trump's tax and spending bill carves out billions of dollars for both ICE and new facilities. Margaret Taleb, a senior contributor at Axios who leads newsroom polling, spoke about this with CNN.
These numbers are moving in the wrong direction for the president. It's clear that the average American thinks that his immigration policies are going too far. He's underwater now. The main points of controversy are around these tough enforcement actions around otherwise law-abiding residents.
Trump's economic policy over the last 6 months introduced a lot of chaos to the markets, especially his on-again, off-again tariffs. The value of the U.S. dollar has slumped more than 10% this year. That's the worst decline the U.S. has seen over the first 6 months of any given year since 1973. His tax and spending bill will add trillions of dollars to the national debt, and polling indicates voters are nervous about that. CNN's poll found 51% believe the bill will hurt the economy, compared to 29% who think it'll help the economy. Some economic indicators, like the unemployment and inflation rates, have held relatively steady since Trump took office, though the inflation rate climbed to its highest level in 5 months in June. And as is the case with immigration, Trump's approval rating on the economy overall is largely split along party lines. According to Gallup, on average, nearly 6 out of 10 Americans said they do feel like things are getting worse. Bump told us from Trump's perspective, because he's not able to run for re-election, the fact is he doesn't need broad support for his policies.
The political peril he faces is if Republicans, the core Republicans who are in Congress, if they start feeling as though it is okay to go sideways on him. So far, they clearly don't feel that way. So the question is, will he be able to maintain this grip that he's had on the core base of Republican primary voters that he's had for years now?
It's been more than 2 weeks since President Trump signed his sprawling tax and spending bill, and constituents, states, and stakeholders are still making sense of what the changes mean for them. At the state level, USA Today reports that many officials are concerned about the steep cuts to Medicaid and SNAP. While the changes to the programs, including the addition of work requirements for many Medicaid recipients, won't fully take effect until after next year's midterms, so after November of 2026, states often budget a year or even 2 years into the future, meaning that right now they are faced with having to decide what else might get trimmed back in order to accommodate these changes.
You move one chess piece and the whole game changes on the board. And that's what states are worried about.
That's Sarah Weyer, senior national political correspondent for USA Today.
A lot of the work's being done at the treasurer or state auditor level. And then that's what legislatures are waiting for, is to get an idea of how it's going to affect revenue so that they can decide how much money they have.
SNAP is currently completely funded by the federal government, but the new legislation imposes requirements for that funding to continue and otherwise shifts some costs to states. Medicaid is a state and federal partnership in terms of funding, and a recent analysis from KFF, a nonpartisan organization focused on health policy, found that about 30% of Medicaid enrollees lived in homes experiencing food insecurity in 2022, meaning that these cuts could have double the impact on their lives. Weyer told us that the estimated new state costs for Medicaid and SNAP are expected to be in the tens of millions or even hundreds of millions of dollars. And unlike the federal government, most states are required to balance their budgets.
At a certain point, they're going to have to cut other programs in order to fill these holes. There's really no way around it for many of these states. And every lawmaker and state official I've spoken to has acknowledged that. Nevada state treasurer said there's just not enough dirt to fill the hole.
Connecticut's treasurer expressed concern about the impact on funding a state pension program. New Mexico's treasurer said the cuts exceed the budget they have for their state children, youth, and families department. And a Minnesota official told Weyer they think their state and others will have to raise taxes. Weyer told us that pushing more responsibility to states could create an uneven playing field.
Some states have rainy day funds that they might be able to invest and fund some of these programs like Medicaid and SNAP for a longer period of time as they take on more of this responsibility. Some states are already talking about maybe having to withdraw from SNAP entirely because they're not going to have the money to fill these gaps.
Let's turn to another element of the tax and spending bill, new government-funded $1,000 savings accounts for babies born between 2025 and 2028, and what parents should know about how they work. This is an idea that economic experts and lawmakers on both sides of the aisle have supported in recent decades to give kids a jumpstart on savings. The spending bill carved out $15 billion to fund these so-called Trump accounts. They're available to all newborns with Social Security numbers, and parents can either sign up at a bank or other qualifying institution or wait for the government to automatically create an account when they file taxes.
They're really like baby IRAs, so they're almost like an individual retirement account for a child.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Ashley Ebling, who spoke with financial experts about the pros and cons that parents should know. Once your child's account is created, you can contribute up to $5,000 a year, and that limit will adjust with inflation. Your employer can contribute too, up to $2,500 annually without adding to your taxable income. For the most part, your child can't touch the account until they turn 18. And compared to other investment accounts for kids, a Trump account holder has more flexibility for how they can use the money. They can go toward college or buying a first home or starting a small business, anything they want, really. Financial experts have praised that element. But they also point out if your primary goal is to use this account to save for your child's college education, there are some better alternative investment options out there. For one, Ebling explained, a 529 account. It grows tax-free and offers tax-free withdrawals for eligible expenses, whereas Trump accounts come with more tax complications.
The different types of contributions are treated differently for tax purposes when you take the money out. So when they take the money out, they might be surprised to see that there's federal tax and possibly state tax withholding on it, depending where they live.
Financial experts say 529 accounts also have more investment options compared to Trump accounts.
They have to be invested in low-cost mutual funds or exchange-traded funds that are made up mostly of U.S. equities.
In other words, investments in specific industries or sectors are not allowed. Now, to be clear, experts largely agree there's no harm in letting the government's $1,000 contribution to the Trump account compound and grow over your child's lifetime. Many American families don't have the means to set up something like that for their kids at such a young age on their own. The top tip from one financial pro Ebling spoke to was treat this account as a nest egg for your child's retirement and convert it to a Roth IRA when they turn 18. That way it can continue to grow for decades to come without any tax penalties. Before we let you go, a few other stories we're following. In Gaza, NPR reports that nearly 100 people were killed by Israeli military fire as they sought food aid on Sunday. That's according to local health authorities and hospital morgue officials. It marks one of the deadliest days in recent months for Palestinians seeking aid. The Israeli military told NPR it was examining the incident, though it contested the numbers being reported. Separately, Pope Leo XIV called for an end to the barbarity of the war yesterday after an Israeli strike hit the only Catholic church in Gaza, killing three people last week. To sports, over the weekend, the WNBA's best players took the court in Indianapolis for the All-Star Game, wearing a clear message on their shirts: pay us what you owe us. The Athletic reports that the message comes as the players' union and the league are negotiating their next collective bargaining agreement. The current one is set to expire on October 31st. The WNBA is experiencing huge growth in viewership, attendance, and merchandise, and the players are arguing that their salaries should reflect that. Nafisa Collier, who won the game's MVP trophy, explained their message in a press conference after the game.
There is no league without the players. And, you know, the past, present, the ones coming up, they're the ones that have put in the blood, sweat, and tears for the new money that's coming in. And so we feel like we are owed a piece of that pie that we helped to create.
And finally, for many people, it seems almost impossible to avoid allergies, whether that means getting a scratchy throat from pollen or tearing up around dogs and cats. But one group of people appears bafflingly immune: the Amish. In fact, a study suggested that one Amish community living in northern Indiana may be one of the least allergic populations tested in the developed world. Researchers at the University of Chicago told the Washington Post they're trying to figure out why. A theory called the hygiene hypothesis suggests that when young kids are exposed to microbes like those found on a farm, it helps them develop a stronger immune system to fight allergies. One researcher told the Post they don't think they can give every family a cow to help allergies, but there might be other identifiable things that the Amish are doing that can help unlock a greater understanding of what makes them so unique to hopefully develop treatments to prevent allergies for young children. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the News app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. The Hollywood Reporter examines how scammers are increasingly using elaborate methods like AI-generated voice memos of famous actors to cheat people out of money. If you're listening in the podcast app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.